Well, good morning, everyone. Many are gone, as we can see, and it's kind of just me. And so as introducing myself, I can say that I've known myself my whole life. And I know that I did put effort in this, but I also know that my concerns is that I'm able to present the message in a way that you would be able to understand it. Because I do believe that this message is kind of exciting to me, and I hope I can convey that across to you, that as I prepared for this, and this has really been a little time coming, because really today is part two. Today is part two of the last sermon that I had the privilege to stand here before you and present to you on the 10th of this month. And I knew when I did that, I was not going to be able to cover everything that I wanted to, but I picked out what I thought was the important message at the time. I knew there was other aspects of it that I'd want to cover, and so I'm going to do that today. And as I knew the last time I preached, it was going to be long. I see that this also could be a very long sermon, in that then I'd have to find something else for tonight. So rather than one long sermon and another one tonight, I've cut it in half, so hopefully you're going to have tonight's part three, that it'll have two short sermons. And hopefully no one objects to that. Kind of a little bit of a review for some who were not here the last time I preached, or kind of review for those who were, kind of refresh your memory, and for those who weren't here. Basically, what I went over is the changes that have come about because of sin. And sometimes, if we don't stop to think about it, just really how every aspect of our life is changed because of sin. Every aspect of what God created, intended from the beginning, has been changed from sin. We went through, I spent the time going through, so that, you know, first off, what we're very familiar with is that man became mortal. That's the first thing, the first consequence of sin, and it shouldn't be a surprise, that we became mortal. We no longer were going to live without some plan to recover us. Death came upon man. There was going to be an end to life. We find that the curse came upon. There's going to be hardships. Things wouldn't go as well as it would have been beforehand. We find that there was an inequality, a struggle that came about between relationships, both between man and woman, and outside of that. We find that when we looked at that, the original creation, man, it said, you know, he lived by, you know, the green herb of the field, by plants and the fruit of the trees, that he didn't consume meat. We find that in the time of creation, that's what God said the animals would eat. We find that in the time of creation, it said it didn't rain, that the earth was watered by a mist. We find that eventually, although death came upon man, he lived for a long time. And then there had to be a change with the flood. And with that, there came a lot of changes. Rain. We find that man's life was shortened again, and this again because of consequences, the consequences of sin. And we find that at this point, both man and beast would now consume meat. And I believe it's because of a change of the way the earth functioned. Before, it hadn't rained. Apparently, all I can do is make some assumptions that our climates were more mellow, because if man and the beast lived by what grew in the field, you know, they had to have a continuous year-round growing cycle. And when rain came, that changed. Now there would be droughts where you couldn't grow things. There were seasons. And because of that, both man and nature were changed. And that was a result of sin. We find that because of the result of sin, at the time of the Tower of Babel, there became different races and different languages. We find at certain times, well, it's with the flood and at the time of Christ's crucifixion, things, that the face of the planet was changed. And so, in short, what I talked about last time is that due to sin, everything about us has changed from the way God created us. Our bodies, our relationships, nature, the animal kingdom, the very planet we live on, everything has changed. We're all things that are created by God, but we do not function or work the way that they were originally created. And what I wanted to point out at that time is that by not understanding that, Satan has proposed this lie upon mankind, that somehow that what we have is the way God created things. They are the things that God created. That's true. God created man. God created the planet. God created all these things, but they no longer function the way that God originally created them. But without that understanding, things that are contrary to God's plan, well, this is the way I was made. This is the way God wanted me to be. Individuals that looked at that, I talked about, you know, don't understand how can God allow certain things to happen, the evil in the world. But the reality is that it's not that God allows it into this creation, that everything's been corrupted and God permits things to continue for a purpose, which is what I'm going to try to talk to today. And so I talked about that even though there's things that are very obvious to us, you know, different lifestyles and things, and people try to excuse them saying, this is the way I was, this is the way God made me. We know that's not the truth, but we can get caught up on those very same things. If we go off and we become content in the way things are and think this is the way God wants us, whether you go off and a camping trip or a hiking trip and you sit there and you think how wonderful and beautiful it is and think, you know, this is the way God meant man to live, we don't look for anything beyond that. Or whether it's going hunting or getting caught up in the environment or our relationships and the church, all these different things. If we do not understand that everything, every aspect of life has been corrupted by sin, it leaves us with basically two reactions, and they're both destructive. One, if things are going well, you become content. You think this is the way God wants things to be, and you don't expect anything more. Or if you're having difficulties, you think somehow you're missing out the things the way life's supposed to be and become frustrated, become angry with God. And they're both destructive. And so last time I spoke to you, this is why I wanted to expose this lie that Satan's put out there and help us to understand that although we are created by God, this planet is created by God, nothing works the way God created it. Everything's been corrupted, and it's been because of sin, things have changed, and we no longer function the way it was in the Garden of Eden. Nothing is the same. Our planet doesn't function the same. The weather doesn't function. Nature doesn't function the same. The Tower of Babel says they're all one language, but because of that, they became evil, and God had to stop that so it didn't progress, and they became different languages. And so everything's been changed from the way it was at the beginning. Now, when I put that forth, that made, to some that talked to me, that it was kind of a new concept. That they hadn't really stopped to think a lot about that. To others, when I thought about it, you know, I kind of knew that, but they hadn't really put a lot of pieces together to understand those things. But hopefully, with that realization, those that were there, I mean, hopefully it's jogging some of your memory, and those that weren't, I mean, I can't spend a whole lot of time getting into that, into that again, because I'm beholden to our sermon. But I want you to understand those concepts, that the world we live in today is not functioning. We do not function the way God did at the beginning, at the time of creation. And so with that understanding, to me, it explained a lot of other things that I kind of have struggled with. Not that it was a detriment, but I just didn't understand. And I'm kind of a curious individual. I want to know the what's and the wherefores and the whys a lot of times. And sometimes that's a bad thing. Sometimes, you know, that can get me in some trouble. But I believe there are answers that can be found, and God has them there. And I believe, as I told you when I spoke before you last, when that understanding came to me, a lot of times these things, they just, you know, I kind of work into them bits and pieces, and that was just kind of like this explosion, right? More than just a light bulb. It's all of a sudden a whole bunch of things just made sense to me. And I tried to explain the last time just a few of those pieces, and now I'd like to build on that. And in my last sermon, I put little tidbits, little seed thoughts in there to see maybe if you thought about it a little bit, maybe you've been thinking about some of these things. And the first thing I did, one of the things I put in there is I talked about, I didn't develop it, but I said, you know, Satan, Scripture tells us, was an angel. That's probably not a big surprise to anyone. It also tells us in Scripture that he was a cherub. He's one of the cherubim. And there is an allusion to the fact that he at least was one of the chief ones and quite possibly an archangel among the cherubim. To support a few of these things, I want to look first at a few scriptures. The first couple are going to be in Revelation. And this is talking about Satan. In Revelation, the 12th chapter, I want to read first verses 3 and 4, and then I'm going to drop down to verses 7 through 9. But Revelation 12, starting with verse 3. And there appeared another wonder in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon having 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 crowns upon his heads. And his tail drew the third part of the stars of heaven, and it cast them to the earth. The dragon stood before the woman, which was ready to be delivered, for to devour her child as soon as it was born. And this is describing Satan as he's there before the woman, as representative of the church here. And then we drop down to verses 7. It says, "And there was a war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought and his angels, and prevailed not. Neither was their place found any more in heaven. And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast with him." So we find that Satan fell from the very presence of God. He was an angel, part of God's kingdom. In Ezekiel, we find, when we start turning there, I'm going to read some verses there. In Ezekiel, we find that Ezekiel is describing the power behind the ruler of Tyre. And he's saying the power that's behind that evil ruler is Satan. And so he, in describing this ruler and the power behind it, he starts to describe Satan. And so we find that in Ezekiel, the 28th chapter, starting with verse 13, this description that's really talking about Satan. It says, "Thou hast been in the garden of God. Every precious stone was thy covering, sardis and topaz and the diamond, the beryl, the onyx, the jasper, the sapphire, the emerald, the carbuncle, and gold. The workmanship of thy tabrets and of thy pipes was prepared in thee in the day that thou wast created. Thou art the anointed cherub that covereth, and I have set thee so. Thou wast upon the holy mountain of God. Thou hast walked up and down in the midst of the stones of fire. Thou wast perfect in thy ways from the day that thou wast created, till iniquity was found in thee. By the multitude of thy merchandise they have filled the midst of thee with violence, and thou hast sinned. Therefore I will cast thee as profane out of the mountain of God, and I will destroy thee, O covering cherub, from the midst of the stones of fire. Thine heart was lifted up because of thy beauty. Thou hast corrupted thy wisdom by reason of thy brightness, and I will cast thee to the ground. I will lay thee before kings, and they may behold thee. Thou hast defiled the sanctuaries by the multitude of thine iniquities. By the iniquity of thy traffic, therefore I will bring forth a fire from the midst of thee. It shall devour thee, and I will bring thee to ashes upon the earth in the sight of all them that behold thee." That's why many believe he's at least a chief among the cherubs, if not an archangel among cherubs. Where he says he was the anointed cherub. He was the one selected. He is described here as all these beautiful and precious stones adorning him, something beautiful and grand to behold. But those things led to his destruction, as we find recorded here in Isaiah, the 13th chapter. Isaiah chapter 13, starting with the 13th verse. "How thou art fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning! How art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nations? For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Yet thou shalt be brought down to hell, to the sides of the pit, that they that see thee shall narrowly look upon thee and consider thee, saying, Is this the man that made the earth to tremble and did shake kingdoms? That made the world as a wilderness and destroyed the cities thereof, that opened not the house of his prisoners?" Some time ago, a few years back, as a Sunday school class, we spent some time and we studied what cherubs were. And this morning in our Sunday school class, I did kind of a little bit of a refresher as far as what we decided cherubs were, or cherubim. And what we learned when we did the study is that they are guardians. They watch over, they maintain, they protect the things that God has put in their charge. We learned as we went through our study of angels that when man was expelled from the Garden of Eden, it was cherubim that were set over the tree of life to make sure that man did not return to partake of it. We learned that there were powers that the Ark of the Covenant had. And that part of its design was there were figures of cherubim over the Ark, facing one another, their wings outstretched as if they were protecting the Ark. And I believe those symbols were symbolic of real cherubim that were set over with the responsibility to watch over and guard and protect that Ark. They had the powers that the very commandments and the rules that God had instilled were going to be fulfilled and made sure that it was handled the way it's supposed to. And if it wasn't, they made sure the consequences came that went with it. That when it was taken properly, Israel was prosperous as a nation in warfare. When it wasn't, they failed. When it fell in the hands of their enemies, horrible things happened. To the point they wanted to get rid of it. They would have destroyed it, but they were unable to destroy it. And I believe it's because the cherubim were watching over it, and they would return it to Israel. It finally didn't disappear until we find, because of Israel's iniquity, they're going to be destroyed. And Ezekiel had a vision where he looked, and he saw the cherubim leave the tabernacle. Not the temple at that point. He saw the cherubim leave. He saw them go out of the gates of the city. I believe what he saw is them leaving their protection over that. And we find after that, it's disappeared. Israel, these nations, Babylon and Assyria came in, they overran them, and the Ark is known no more. We find that it's described that they surround the throne of God. Guardians of Him. And years ago when we did that little study, I kind of wondered about these descriptions of cherubim and seraphim. And I had this dream. We went over a portion of it this morning, our Sunday school class. I'm going to go over a portion of it again here this morning. Because it helped me to understand something at that time, and now I believe I understand even more. What I'm referring to is I'm going to turn to it here, that this is a dream that I had on December 16th, 2000. And it came as a result of trying to understand how these cherubim and seraphim, they're described having, you know, different wings and different faces and wheels and eyes and not really understanding what all these things mean. And so I had this dream, and it went as following. It says, I saw what I can only describe as a sphere, but it was not solid. It had portions moving in different directions opposite of one another all at the same time. As I watched, it transformed into a wheel that was spinning inside of rings at 90 degrees one to another, much like a gyroscope. You know, and to this day, I don't have the words to describe that original sphere. I could see things moving in it. I could see it in motion, but there's really there's just nothing really to describe until it started to change. And then there's things that, you know, I could relate it to, like the rings moving inside another, like the gyroscope. And then it continued as I watched. You know, I saw it change first in a wheel that was spinning, and then gears turning with interlocking teeth, and then pulleys with the ropes and cords moving through them. And as I saw these pulleys in motion, the scene changed to a spectacular view of the universe with all its stars and galaxies, and then changed to our solar system with its sun, planets, and moons, all in continual perfect motion. I then saw our planet Earth, perfectly suspended in space, moving around the sun as the moon circled our little planet. I next saw the abundant life on Earth in perfect harmony, sustaining each other, and each portion was created by what appeared to be billions upon billions of atoms, looking much like a microscopic solar system. There was suddenly a bright and brilliant flash of white, and I saw a hand outstretched holding the sphere that I had originally seen still in motion. I could only see the hand and the forearm that held the sphere, but not the person behind it. A brilliant being approached the outstretched hand holding the sphere. He had the appearance of a man in that he had a face, arms, hands, and legs, but seemed to emit light and glow, and had six wings from the back all outstretched, easily 3 to 4 times the width of his body. The upper wings were stretched out above him, high above him, and the middle wings out to the side, and the lower ones descending down to the ground about his feet. You know, as I watched this being, I saw him approach this outstretched hand that was holding the sphere. But then he turned and departed. leaving the sphere behind. As I continued to watch, another being very similar to the first appeared and approached before that sphere. You know, this one also had the appearance of a man in radiated light, but I could only see two wings. They're outstretched to the side and appeared to be clothed in this long robe. This being had the face of a man and held out his hands before him, cupped together before the sphere to take it. The hand holding the sphere placed it in the cupped hands of this being, and as he held the sphere in his hands, the face changed to that of a lion. He then turned and began to move away from the outstretched hand. As he did so, his face turned to that of an ox, and that which I presumed to be a long robe opened to become four additional wings. And with the six open wings, he flew over the earth and continued until his face changed to that of an eagle. And then he flew from the earth back to the outstretched hand and returned the sphere to this outstretched hand. At that time, when I immediately awoke. Now, when I had this dream, I didn't hear any words spoken to me, but I felt that I understood what I was seeing. This understanding is that, you know, cherubim, they're guardians of things. They have powers and authority that God's given them, and he entrusts things in their care, the tree of life, the Ark of the Covenant, his throne. And as I watched that, what I believe I understood that that sphere was representative of more than just creation, but of all the laws and natures and laws of nature and physics that keep our universe working. As I put, you know, there's so many forces working that we don't understand. Our planets, our solar systems are moving in constant paths. We can predict things. We know how long a day is, how long a year takes us to go around the sun and things. They're constant, but no one really understands them. We understand how they work because they're at a constant. We can measure them and we can predict by them, but really there is really nothing that really you can explain why. Why are these forces pulling things together and holding things together? If you think about it, you know, everything here is made up of atoms with little moving parts that really don't touch one another. There's really no reason for anything to be solid except these things. They have forces that attract together at constants, that they can determine strengths of things, wood versus concrete in construction, because they have a strength with a force that they attract to one another. Part of the things I wanted to understand when we were studying about these angels are these things about wheels and the eyes. And I have a copy of this dream where I go into a lot of those different things. Well, I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to do a little bit more. You know, I had this experience, I believe that what the sphere represented is the counterpart of the wheel seen by Ezekiel. I believe that the first creature which turned away was Satan. Ezekiel 28:14 tells us that Satan was a cherub. We read that just a few minutes ago. And I believe the image with his wings outstretched was symbolic of Satan's arrogance and pride that would not allow him to take the responsibility offered to him. And that's what Isaiah was describing. But finally, this other being, another cherub approached and took that responsibility. As I went through, you know, this experience, I believe their faces were symbolic of different things. The ox for its strength and endurance, lion for authority and power, the eagle, because it's not bound by this earth. It sails effortlessly above this earth, and it's not bound by the things that bind us to this earth. And I believe they're all symbolic of these powers and these authorities that cherub have. And I believe as I had that dream, you know, that what was being shown was that they maintain this earth the way it is. Our solar system, everything, the laws of nature and physics, and they maintain those things. And now with what I understood when I first stood before you three weeks ago on the 10th, you know, that everything has changed from the way God created it. And when I first saw, I had that dream, you know, I thought, and it's true, that as this fear changed into things, you know, so I could understand, you know, gears and pulleys and gyroscopes, things about how our earth works. And when I had that dream, I felt that was the extent of it, you know, that so I would understand that this is the mechanics and the laws of physics. But as I expressed to us the last time I stood here about the consequences of sin, that everything has changed. And we cannot even imagine the way God created things. The world worked completely different. And that's the way the sphere was when it first appeared. Something that I cannot to this day really describe. There's no words that I can really describe until it started to change. The things that I can recognize. The way our world works now and that they're maintaining. According to God's command, because of the consequences of sin, there are things that have changed, and they're maintaining that. But in the end, it changed back into that original sphere when he handed it back to that outstretched hand. I believe that sphere, you know, represented the way God originally created in the Garden of Eden, where things were different. I cannot describe that sphere, and I cannot describe to you the way things were in the Garden of Eden. I don't know that they were different. You know, it tells us that there wasn't rain. The earth was watered by mist. So, you know, man, neither man nor beast ate meat. They lived off plants and fruit of the tree. But man was first there. He was immortal. He was going to live forever with God. I can only assume from the way it's described and what I'm going to talk about here in the description of Isaiah later on that man lived at peace and harmony with the animals. That sphere changed. That sphere changed because of Satan. You know, that's what told us back there in Ezekiel, you know, when the Lord was describing, he says, you know, you were in the garden. You were the anointed one. You were the anointed cherub. That figure that I had in my dream that first was offered, the sphere that was handed out, which I believe is a representation of God's creation. But Satan didn't just walk away. He refused to accept to maintain that sphere in its condition, he walked away and went about to corrupt it, to build his own plan. That's where Isaiah was describing it, where he's talking, says, "For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the cloud. I will be like the Most High." But that sphere in my dream, after going through these changes, it returned to its original form. That I believe Isaiah, when in the 11th chapter of Isaiah, that when he's looking down in the annals of time into the latter days and the return of Christ, he is describing something that's foreign to us, but sounds like the way things worked when God first created man and put him there in the garden. Where Isaiah, looking far into the future, Isaiah 11, starting with the sixth verse, it says, "The wolf shall dwell with the lamb, and the leopard shall lie down with the kid, and the calf and the young lion and the fatling together, and a little child shall lead them. And the cow and the bear shall feed, their young ones shall lie down together, and the lion shall eat straw like an ox. And the sucking child shall play at the hole of the asp, and the weaned child shall put his hand in the cockatrice's den. They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain." Holy Mount. That's what the Lord was describing about Satan when he says that he was the anointed cherub. He says, "You were in my most holy mountain. For the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters over the sea." Satan was that anointed cherub that was originally given the responsibility of maintaining man in God's creation. And he corrupted it. And he has corrupted every aspect of it. Today we live in a world where there is nothing that hasn't been corrupted by His hand, that isn't corrupted by sin, and the fact that something has changed, that is no longer the way that God created. That's why Christ, when He's referring to Satan in John 14:30, He says, the prince of this world. Because this world we live in is not functioning the way that God created it. Satan was the cherub that was entrusted with the guardianship of creation, and he set about to change it, and he succeeded. We now live in a world where every aspect has been corrupted, and the fact that although these are things that have been created by God, they no longer work, they no longer function, they are no longer in the manner that He created them at the beginning. Man was expelled from the Garden of Eden, God's creation, the way God first put things in order because of Satan's corruption. He deceived Eve. She, in turn, deceived Adam. It's a familiar story, so for time, I'm not going to go into it, but while they were in the Garden of Eden, it says they could partake of the tree of life, but they were not to partake of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Once they were expelled, they now had access to the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, but if you remember, it said God set cherubim that they no longer would partake of the tree of life. And so when we start to understand that, the things that follow, at least in my mind, suddenly start to make sense. We now can understand why, sometime later, I don't know the exact amount of time that passes, but it's still in the opening chapters of the Bible in Genesis, and not just a few chapters down, we find suddenly God's destroying the whole world by this flood. Why is He wanting to destroy the very thing He created? Because that rebellious guardian that He put over had corrupted every aspect of it. In Genesis 6, starting with verse 5, it's described like this. It said, God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And repented the Lord that He had made man on the earth, and it grieved Him at His heart. And the Lord said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast and the creeping thing and the fowl of the air, for it repenteth me that I have made them. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. Everything on the face of the planet was deserving of death, corrupted. But God saw something in Noah that He believed He could salvage. That's not one of the little seed ideas I put the last time I stood before you. If you remember, I talked about that God is on a salvage operation. I liken it like a shipwreck. It's gone down. The ship isn't going to be brought back up. It's a loss. But divers, a lot of times, will go down. They'll try to find something in there that hasn't been damaged, that they think they can bring it up. It's all dirty and covered in barnacles and dirt, and they bring it up. They clean it all up and shine it. They've salvaged it. God is on a salvage operation, but that shouldn't be a surprise to us. I think a lot of times we don't think about it in that way, but what do we talk about all the time? The plan of salvation. That's where salvation comes from, to salvage. We read in Alma 19. Alma 19, I'm going to start with verse 108. And thus God bringeth about His great and eternal purposes, which were prepared from the foundation of the world. And thus cometh about salvation and redemption of men. And so when we start to understand this corruption that's come upon, that everything's been changed, when God looks down upon it, He sees nothing that's left of the way He created things in the beginning. He looks down, He sees everything's been corrupted, every aspect. When He looks down upon the way the world functions, the way people behave, relationships, nations, and languages, all because they've been corrupted by sin. And so when God looks down like He did when He looked down upon Noah, He permits evil to continue that he might salvage some good from it. That's what we talk about, the plan of salvation, that he can find something good that he can bring out of this mess. That ultimately it would require a substitute, a savior. That's what we talk about, the plan of redemption. Redemption means to pay the price, to be a substitute for it. But salvation means to salvage, to look, to find something in an otherwise useless mess that you can find something that you can do with. Salvation is the act of saving or being saved, preservation from destruction or rescue. Whereas redemption is from redeem. It means to purchase, to satisfy the debt, or to pay the price. If you remember from the first part, when I talked to you, what was happening with man? Originally, although death came upon him when he was expelled from the garden, you find that for some time up to the flood, lived very long. 5, 6, in the case of Methuselah, 900 and some odd years. Man was living very long. Which led up to the time where, before Noah, where all he saw was wickedness. Man was living so long that with all that time, he just found new ways to be deceitful, to be devious, to find new ways to circumvent the laws that God had put in place. It was leading to man's destruction. Find that prior to the flood, you know, man, it says that man lived by the green herb, the fruit of the tree. And with that, we have to assume, you know, that the world was different. That year-round, he could harvest and grow things and have these things. That we didn't have these big seasons like we have today. Said that it hadn't rained. You know, the water, the earth was watered by mist. We talked about that the last time I stood before us. It was very different, and man lived very long. Then, because of this wickedness, God put a change. Because of the consequences of sin, because it was leading to nothing good, he changed things. There's now going to be rain. And with rain, there'll be droughts. And because of that, we have to presume that now that we have the seasons. And man could no longer live year-round off what he grew in the field. There will be seasons and harvest times. But in between, he'd be without. At least from the way it originally tells us that man lived when he was first in the garden. So man would have died very quickly. But God put a plan there. Now man was going to consume meat. Now blood and death was going to be required that man might live. Although it would be a shortened life. It says now his time frame would be 120 years. And that will be a type for a sacrifice for our spiritual death that would require a sacrifice. It tells us here in Genesis 9, I'm going to start with the second verse. This is just after the flood. Genesis 9, starting at verse 2. It says, "And the fear of you and the dread of you shall be upon every beast of the earth and every fowl of the air, upon all that moveth upon the earth. Upon all the fishes of the sea, and into your hand are they delivered. Every moving thing that liveth shall be meat for you, even as the green herb have I given you all things." That's he referring where we read back the first time when I gave the first part of this sermon in Genesis, where I gave the green herb to the fishes. Now, as you've had the green herb all this time, now animals of this planet will be meat for you to sustain your life. "But the flesh with the life thereof, which is the blood thereof, you shall not eat. And surely your blood of your lives will I require at the hands of every beast will I require it." I want us to understand that what we're operating here is a plan of salvation, a salvage operation from God. That we have to understand those things, that we don't get caught up and believing that there's anything good really in this earth. That's why we're told all these things are going to pass away. To understand what's happened with Satan right there in the beginning of the garden. What he's accomplished. And that we're living in the results of that, but God will not be beaten. God in the end will be victorious because he has a plan. When I spoke to you last, I talked about the great lie he put that deceived us. And hopefully, those of you here that heard that, you know, you begin to realize that and you see it around you. Maybe you felt it in some of your own experiences. This morning, what I want to point out to you is how this corruption came to be, the sources behind it that's resulted in the change. And what really, when we talk about the plan of salvation, what we're really talking about, and that's what it's a salvage operation. And then I'm going to tonight continue, and I'm going to pick up from there about part of that, the necessity of that plan of salvation is to find something salvageable and the requirements to be something that can be salvaged. And that is to become something new. And the importance of that is because everything has been corrupted. Satan has been successful in corrupting everything that God started there in the garden. And if God is going to find something to salvage, it's got to be something new. And that's what I'm going to talk about tonight. Thank you.